Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening again. My name is Birju, and will be your host for our weekly Global Awaken call. Today, our special guest speaker is none other than Maki Sayanji Kawamura, and she is somebody who really empowers today's theme of the power of prayer. As context for the call, in a few minutes, our moderator, Bhavi Mehta, will be engaging in deep dialogue with our speaker. And by the top of the hour, we'll roll into Q&A and a circle of sharing, and would love for that to be the foundation to pass it along to you to introduce our speaker.
Absolutely, my pleasure. So it's really hard to introduce Maki because she's just such a special person, but I'm going to do my best. And anyone who's met her, it kind of brings to life what Gandhi meant, you know, when he said, "In a gentle way, we can shake the world." She's petite, she's soft-spoken, and yet she carries in her heart this flaming torch of love for all of life. And she has this conviction that she lives, that we're here to foster the spark of our highest potential in ourselves and in each other. And when we do that, she believes that we birth new possibilities for our world. Maki grew up in a family that has spent decades praying for peace on a daily basis. And she's a peace pilgrim in her own right, and her journey through life has shaped her for many different roles. She's a quietly brilliant leader and managing director of the GOI Peace Foundation, a forward-thinking organization that brings together leading scientists, writers, educationalists, artists, and more, all with the goal of awakening a new consciousness in every human heart. She's also the deputy vice chairperson of Byakko Shinkokai, a remarkable spiritual organization that has been supporting prayer as an instrument for social change for over half a century. It brings tens of thousands of people together annually. Birju and I have both had the privilege of being part of, you know, one of those events, and it's truly a humbling experience to see the sincerity and the dedication with which those prayers take place. Maki is a healer trained in both Eastern and Western medicine. She worked as a pediatrician and found herself drawn also to serving people nearing their transition from this life. She's a dedicated daughter, ever-protective big sister, loving wife and mother, and a noble friend to so many of us. It's a deep honor to have her on this call with us today. Maki-san, thank you so much for making the time and for being the beautiful being that you are.
Thank you very much for such a heartwarming introduction. Your introduction gave tears to my eyes because I feel like you know me so much more than myself, and you made me realize who am I and what am I like living for. So I really thank you for your heartwarming introductory pavi.
Oh. Well, I'm so happy to have this opportunity to share your spirit with the world, Maki-san. And I just want to jump right in so that people can have the benefit of hearing your stories. You know, I was thinking about your mother, the remarkable Masami Sayonji. And as a teenager, she went through a time of intense personal suffering, and it was through the guidance of the poet, philosopher, spiritual teacher Masahisa Goi that she was brought to prayer as a tool for healing oneself in the world. And she had remarkable experiences that, in a way, gave her that great conviction that she carries today and that anyone who meets her feels instantly. My question to you is, you know, growing up with that kind of a mom, how do you remember when and how you first learned to pray?
I was raised up in a very different environment where prayer was like very natural. Like so it's like learn a child learning a word is like, for me, learning a prayer is like that new language, a different language,
Wow.
which is like always there with me. So I never have a memory of learning prayer, but all every day there's a prayer in my family. So, but as I grow up, it's kind of different. Maybe as I grow up, and then if I as I extend my community to a larger community, like going to school, seeing new friends, I realized that, you know, prayer is a different tool for the communication. So as growing up, I realized that it's a different language.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's a very different environment than some other people, where people learn to pray at a certain age or when they face a difficulty in their life, they learn to pray.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I love that idea of it, prayer being just another language that you learn, like a child learns the word for water or the word for hungry.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's beautiful.
So every day, like, we pray for, like, the nature of the world. Like, if we go traveling, we say, thank you, dear mountain. Or if we go to the ocean to swim, before we swim in the morning, we say, we open the window and we just say, thank you, dear ocean, thank you, dear air, thank you, dear nature. And then that's, like, the beginning of the morning for us.
Uh-huh.
And at the end, we pray for, like, peace of the world, which is, like, may peace prevail on earth.
Uh-huh. And that was just
so
part of your daily,
yes.
daily fabric
yes,
of
yes.
your life.
Yes.
That is so beautiful.
So, like, my grandfather said, like, a prayer should be something that's not time that you need to create, but every day, whatever you do, that message is always in your heart, and live that message is what he was like telling my mother, and my mother was telling us.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't we don't sit for like an hour to pray. I mean, when I was a child, we don't sit for an hour to pray for the peace of the world, but it's kind of like while you cook, you thank the food, while you watch news and there's a terrible like tragedy in the news, you pray for the peace of the world. So during that your everyday life, there are so many places that you can practice this prayer.
And it prevents, I mean, I think that's beautiful, the way you interweave it without being sort of this thing that you have to do. It's kind of scattered throughout your whole day, and just almost like it's a way of being more than it is like a separate action that you're performing. As you talk,
yeah.
That's what's coming up for me. So did you ever feel like it was a mechanical thing, or that, you know, and then it suddenly came to life for you, where you're like, oh, this is what prayer is. This is what we're doing. This is why I'm doing this.
Yes. I think when I was starting, when I was like junior high school and high school, my parents took us to their work or to the events, like peace ceremonies and peace parades. And when I realized people praying together, that energy that was created was so much different than I myself praying by myself, or we pray as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And that big energy radiated by each person that was existence in that place made me realize that it has so much power, you know. If we pray for the peace of the world, that message is really carrying the energy to heal the world and heal the people. And when I realized that power, my daily prayers power has shifted too. So it's that realization that gave me much more strength and power to continue this daily habit.
That's so beautiful to understand that. Like, I think each of us, I think in our own ways, have had that experience of sitting in communion with other people who are tapping into that deep part of the deepest part of themselves. And there is almost like a, I don't know how to describe it, but like a quality, a vibration, an energy that you experience. And I think that so much of what you're talking about, that conviction comes from that experience of interconnection and how we strengthen each other as we deepen in our own practices. One thing that I think of, I see you and your sisters and your family. Each one of you are so interconnected, and yet you're each your own person. You know, you each have your own path that you're following, and it's individual and yet interconnected. And there's a beauty to that. And I was thinking about how, you know, some people come to Earth and they're born knowing their calling. They're born knowing what they're meant to do. And some of the rest of us, you know, we kind of figure it out step by step, and we're still figuring it out. And I was wondering, coming from, you know, being born into a family where you have parents who are legendary in the field of peace work, you know, who have these enormously selfless missions that they're working towards, did you always know that was going to be part of your mission, or how did you, what was your journey like to kind of following your calling?
Since a little girl, I always knew how important my parents' work were, because they were so dedicated to creating peace in the world. They traveled all the places where they needed to go. So most of the time, my sister and I were like spending time with people who took care of us, who were not like our connected close family. Mm-hmm. So I knew how important their work were, but at the same time, my mission, I felt as a young child, my mission were more like helping them, not like helping the world or helping their work, but I want to support them. So my role as a supporting them was being a good child, you know, not to make them worry. So I was like a really good child who would do whatever they wanted me to do. And that was my journey. And but at a certain time, when I was like 30 years old, my close friend asked me, what do you want to... What do you like to do, or what's your mission? And when she asked me this question, I became like blank. And the fact that I couldn't answer that question it was a big shock for me. And I felt like I was colorless. You know, color, no color. I don't have any color. And I realized that I really needed to find my own color. And the only way to find my color was really work with myself, like asking myself, what do you like to do? What's your mission? Why are you here? Like, what are you born to do? And this work was really, it took a long time. It took like more than 1 year to do this. In order to, and then the prayer helped me to do this too, you know. I think prayer can radiate energy towards the world, but at the same time, it can really, like Pavi said, it can deepen yourself. And, you know, we're living in the world where we receive so much information from our eyes and ears, so we need to create like the time to shut down our eyes and ears, and then really, unless we connect, we shut down these information from our eyes and ears, we cannot hear what our inner voice is telling us to do. It's so quiet. So at the beginning, my voice was so quiet that I couldn't hear, but as I continue asking myself, like, what is it inside of me telling to do, I started to realize what my missions are and what my roles are, and that guided me to live the life that I'm living right now.
Beautiful, beautiful. And at that, so this was when, at that time, I mean, I think there's such a, you've hit on something very profound here, this idea that we're constantly taking in information through the eyes and the ears, and yet there's this deeper wisdom of the heart that we don't tune into often enough, and that the heart is full of its own kind of information, and we need to practice and sharpen our skills in tuning into that. That's so beautiful, and so it was almost like you were prepared your whole life to practice that art, and it's heartening, I think, for some of us to hear that. You know, it takes time. It's not something you hear overnight. For maybe some people do, but for some of us, it takes that showing up to listen in that way. And at this time, can you speak a little bit about how your path led you initially to the healing profession? And what that experience
is
like?
I lost my grandfather with a cancer when I was age of 15 years old. And at that time, I saw the pain and suffering that my grandfather had to go through. And that process guided me to think about, you know, the process of death and dying. And I really had struggle understanding that death and dying are so painful process that people have to go through. That idea did not connect it to my heart. You know, I really, the birthing of the child is full of happiness and joy, and I think that death and dying process is similar to that birthing process, and it shouldn't be like fear or death or a dark image. And I didn't want my parents to die like that, like my grandfather. So I realized that to search my answer about death and dying, I wanted to go study deeper into that field, and that's why I decided to go to medical school to become a physician.
Mm-hmm. It just feels like nurturing has always been kind of a part of your journey. You're the big sister. You're, in a way, that's such a touching image to me of you as a little girl recognizing that your parents were doing important work in the world and that your job was to kind of take care of them in a sense by taking care of yourself and being good in every way that you knew how. And then to have that then lead you into very naturally, I think, into the field of healing. And I guess my question from there is, how did your footsteps then turn towards the peace work that you're now involved with?
I knew from the young age that my parents' work was so important, and my parents, I respected them so much, but my parents never told me to follow their step. You know, they said, find your own path, find your own journey, but do whatever you do. Whatever you do has to be connected to the service for the community or the world. So, and I respected them so much, but I respected them too much that I didn't have confidence to say that I wanted to do their work. You know, to follow them, to take over their work when I become, you know, older, because I was so afraid that when I was not good enough to help them, and I was so afraid that when I take over their work, that I won't be able to do like them, and I will, you know, crush this everything that they created using their whole life. And that was too scary for me to do. So I tried to find a different path that can be connected to their work, which is service for the world, and that can be connected to what I wanted to do, which is create a place for a peaceful place for death and dying, make the process of death and dying more peaceful and harmonious. That's why I went to medical school. But when I was doing a night duty at the hospital, I had this dream where my parents, it was really a scary dream, but my parents both died. And people who supported them is coming to my sister and myself to ask us, what should we do for the next, what should we do? Mm-hmm. What should organization do? And I realized that I don't know anything about their work. I don't know how they move the organization. I don't know. You know, I have seen them from the outer perspective, but never inside of them or working them with them together. So I did not know anything. And that realization made me think, like, I am walking in a wrong path, you know? Mm. I think, like, if I work as a physician, there's always somebody who can teach me how to heal a patient or how to find the symptoms or the treatment for the symptoms, but no one can teach. Only my parents can teach me about what they're doing, and if I lost them, there's no one else who can teach that method to us. And mm-hmm. and then when I realized that, I was able to make a decision to shift my work from the physician to what I am doing right now, which is supporting my parents' work.
That's beautiful. And when did you make that shift?
When I was 30 years old. You know, the time when I realized that I needed to find my own color, and that process all came together at the same time.
I think there's so many things that are intriguing here. I think that it's so telling that your parents who have spent their life doing this work didn't push that on their daughters, or didn't, you know, kind of almost went the opposite and said, you know, you find your own path and find your own kind of what makes you come alive in the world and do that as your form of service. And that that I think that allowed for a beautiful growth in your own in your own journey and in the way that you have taken on that that responsibility, all of you, in different ways. Quite remarkable. What was their response when you went back with them? When you went back with this?
My mom was really happy, and she was like, but at the beginning she was like, are you sure? Because what I am doing is very, very difficult, because if you are a physician, you can just be a physician when you're working. But my mother was saying, if you want to be a healer or a religious leader like my mother, spiritual mm-hmm. leader like my mother, there never is a resting time. If you decided to become a spiritual leader, mm-hmm. your every day, every moment is about healing and about praying and about really connecting to your source and never rest. So it's not an easy path. So please think over. I mean, she said I would love to accept your offer, but please think about your choice and decision before you make a final decision.
That sounds so like her. It's so, so wise and and honest. Oh my goodness! And what was it something that came easily, that transition when you stepped into that role? Was there a lot of learning that you had to do, or did it feel like a fish in water that you immediately just felt like, oh, I'm home?
Yes, I was really thankful for myself able to make this kind of decision, because I think I was yearning to do this, to make this decision, but I didn't have courage to do that when I was younger. when I was like 17 or 18, it took time, like it took 15 more, 16 more years since to make this final decision. But when I was able to make it, it just made me like, oh, here is the path that I was supposed to walk, and I'm back. But my parents always have told me that there never be a not necessary path. Your life path is whatever you choose is the path that you needed to choose. So someday in the future, your learning will all come together and blossom in a way that only you can blossom. So that was the advice that I received from them. And from then, I'm glad that I made this kind of decision.
And the world is glad, too. All the better for it. I wanted to hear you explain in your own words. I've experienced it as a, you know, as a visitor to Mount Fuji, where you have the peace sanctuary, and where you hold the Symphony of Peace prayers each year. And these are events where literally, you know, multiple thousands of people gather and pray for peace in using a very simple prayer, may peace prevail on earth, and they pray for all the individual countries in the language of that country together. And being there and experiencing the power of that is kind of hard to put into words. And I was wondering, you know, because when you're trying to explain this to people who haven't experience the power of prayer, how do you explain how this works? You know, how does it work that you say these words, and of course I know it's not just about the words, but you make these prayers, you do it together, and then what happens? Like, what is the power of prayer in your view?
It's the reason why my grandfather, Masahisa Goi, created this prayer, May Peace Prevail on Earth, is because he has experienced World War II. And after witnessing the devastation caused by war, he realized that we individuals cannot achieve peace and happiness, the true peace and happiness, until the whole world is at peace. And at the same time, we cannot bring peace to the world unless we ourselves have attained a state of peace. So he came up with this message, like, may peace prevail on earth, which it's very simple and easy, and anyone in the world can accept and adopt in their daily life. But it's about letting go your own self, that you're like, may peace prevail on earth, and you're like, in the earth, your existence is in the earth. So by praying may peace prevail on earth, you're praying yourself, have peace for yourself, and at the same time, you're praying for the peace of the world, which is like achieving the goal at the same time, your peace and the world peace. And so this is the prayer that my grandfather created. But in Mount Fuji, like you said, every month, we pray for each country. So we would say, like, may peace prevail from alphabetical order. So we'll say, like, may peace be in Afghanistan, may peace be in Angola. And so there's 191 countries around the world. So we pray each country using the country's flag. And what is powerful about this is because so, like, if you go to the country where the country is fighting against certain country, it is very hard to pray for the other country that's hurting your country, right? But if as you pray for if the country is one of 191 country, you can pray for the other country, and this transformation of you, your individual self-thought that it's impossible to pray for the other country, but as a process, you were able to pray. And this surprise that happens in your life, it is creating a big transformation. And I think this is the power of prayer. The transformation cannot occur from outside, but it has to occur from inside. But it's very difficult to do it by yourself. So my mother always said, you may not be able to pray for the happiness and peace for a certain person which you really hate, but you can say, may peace prevail on earth, or may peace prevail on certain country, because because you're not saying that individual person's name. But as an energy, it will reach that person, and that process is really healing the relationship with that person, but at the same time, it's really healing yourself. And that healing is really making you transform into a bigger existence.
That's so well said, so well said. And I have to say that, you know, being in that sea of people and listening to the wave after wave of words, you know, of intention, may peace prevail on earth, and we all had our little printouts, and you know, and for certain countries, I mean, you prayed in all the national languages of that country, and it was, you know, it was so beautiful because it was so foreign, like the languages were so foreign to the place that we were in, and yet there was such spirit and such sincerity in the way that people were vocalizing these words, and you could just feel that shared sense of sisterhood and brotherhood. And I never thought of it that way, that it's sometimes easier to pray for the bigger things, or for world peace, than to focus your attention on one person who you're struggling with. And sometimes if you can start with the bigger piece, and then that reaches the microcosm, that's a beautiful, beautiful perspective. And I can imagine, have there ever been times when you started the prayer kind of feeling a little bit upset or annoyed or frustrated or sad, and then find that transformation as you go through your prayers to suddenly turn it inside?
Yes, it's always like I feel like that life is really a challenge, and there's never a moment of continuous peace. Every day there's things happening and things are moving your heart, but for example, like I have three daughters, and one of my daughter, when she was 2 years old, she said to me, I hate myself. And when I heard her say, like, I hate myself, I was so upset, like, this 2 years old girl is hating her own self. And what did I do to make her think like she hates herself? And I really went into a prayer and deep meditation, and I realized that maybe unconsciously I was comparing her with the elder daughter, which is like 1 year older than her. Mm-hmm. And my unconscious behavior is making her think like maybe she hates herself. So mm-hmm. from that day, I decided to consciously act like differently. And it took a long time, like after 2 years, shift really occurred, and which is like, she said, Mom, I love myself. She said that to me. And when she said that to me, the tears really came out of myself. And I think it's not only because I was happy that she loved herself, but more like, because I was able to, I think, transform. And this is like the power of transformation. It's like it happens, the environment changes at the same time as you change. And this can be only created by like commitment that comes from your own divine spark or the own source. And if you're like walking the choosing the path from that source, inner source, and then make a commitment to really work and then try to create a living that aligns with the source, then if you continue that, the transformation occurs. There are many people who ask me questions like, even though I pray for the peace of the world,
mm-hmm.
the peace never comes to me. Or the bad things happen to my life. Why am I praying for the peace and the bad things occur in my life? But it's about, you know, it's about how much the patience and commitment that you wouldn't give up praying is really the key. And then if you think about boiling water,
mm-hmm.
then maybe the pot size might be different, the power of the fire might be different. And then if you put the thermometer in the water, you can see that the temperature will rise as you put heat under the mm-hmm. the pot. But many people just give up, you know, if that just give up before it becomes 100 degrees. So that the shift doesn't seem to happen. If the water temperature goes up to 100 degrees, you can see that it started to have a bubble, you know, bubble coming out, and you can see that, oh, the difference is coming. But many people just give up, you know, putting fire at like 40 or 50 degrees, which would, and if you stop heating, the only thing that happens is that just like the water will cool down. And then if after cooling down, maybe you start praying again. It was just going like 40 and 30, 40, 30, and then that will make you think like, oh, it doesn't change. But the important thing is that even the fire is so small, you just keep doing it. And then the size of the water may be different in each individual, so you don't compare with other people. You know, like we've been praying together and her transformation came before me. It does not work with friends. So you just need to just continue and then just see the small differences that's happening, like small tiny bubble that's coming out, and then just believe that, okay, this small bubble came, so my temperature is really rising, and then the transformation time will come really close. So it's to appreciate these small change that's happening in your life and trying to look for that change that's happening is the very important thing. You know, big shift doesn't come all at once, but all these small signs are really coming to you if you just believe and continue doing that.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, I think one of the most touching moments for me when I was with all of you at the Symphony of Peace prayers was something your beautiful sister Yuka-san, when she was addressing the gathering, and like you, she just has such a transparent heart. It's you can see how deeply she feels these things, and she was, you know, there is strife, there is struggle, there is violence in so many eruptions all over the world, and it's we all feel that, and all of you, you know, you who have been doing this work as well, you feel that, and you feel the pain of that. And something she said in that moment, she was like, you know, there's so many, I'm paraphrasing, these aren't her exact words, but there's so many people in this world today who do not have the capacity to pray in this moment. They are so beaten down. They're suffering so much. It's just their heart doesn't have that. They haven't woken up to their own spark yet. And that's why it's so important for us to kind of keep tending the flame, to keep praying until every heart has its prayer. And that that commitment, you know, she was in tears as she said it, and you could just feel her strength, you know, and the strength that comes from that, because it's not a blindness. It's not saying, oh, let's pretend everything's fine and just keep praying for peace. It's like you're in touch with the suffering, you're in touch with the pain, and you're choosing to feed the spark. You know, you're choosing to look for that light. And the divine spark that you mentioned is such an integral part of the work that you're doing now, and this idea of looking for that flame of possibility and that flame of potential, that flame of truth and light and hope and beauty in each individual, in each situation, in each field, and saying, how can we, you know, how can we feed this and take things to the next level? And that's not an easy job to do. Can you speak a little bit about your conviction that there is because I can imagine some people must come to you and say, you know what, you have the divine spark, but I don't think everybody has it, you know, or every situation has it. There must be some people that are just sparkless, you know, or some things that just don't have that. And what has your experience been with finding that spark and cultivating that spark?
It's similar to what my sister said. It's about, you know, if you can go deeper into yourself and find your own spark, the person who finds the spark in yourself can really believe that everyone has spark. So I am lucky that I was able to find my spark. But since I found my spark, I have really strong belief, or I'm so 100% sure that everyone in the world have that spark as me too, because we are all same humans. We're from same human family. So until the time that person can really understand that they have spark, I want to really believe that person has spark and then try to connect to that, you know, spark in each individual. And it's really, sometimes it's really, people ask me, like, it's very, like, maybe you're if you understand what I'm going through, then you will understand that this person that I'm facing with don't have spark. And they would explain me how horrible the neighbors are or classmates are. But unless you, I think it's about, you know, making commitment to decide that. So I have made commitment to decide that I will see divine spark in all the people around the world. And because I made that commitment, even the person that sometimes there's a people who's really making me irritate or really making upset, and it's sometimes it's like, no, that she or he doesn't have spark. But since I made that commitment to connect to the spark, it's not about giving up. It's about trying to continuously find a way or a path to connect to that. And if you don't give up, there's always a way. You know, if this way doesn't go well, maybe this way and this way. And it's always taking time, but if you just you keep doing it, there's always a little bit of difference that can be created by walking a different path. And I have a beautiful example who is my friend, and she's a mother of the she has a son who was a victim of the really bad car accident, and the son was really injured bad that he had to be taken to the emergency hospital, and he was diagnosed with a spinal cord injury and was told by the doctor that he wouldn't be able to walk for the rest of his life. And the mother was like really, really upset and, you know, really like really furious and really sad at the same time. All these emotion was coming from her, and at first she has like strong anger and strong resistance towards the man who caused the damage, and that the victimizer came to apologize, but she wouldn't accept seeing him because she was too like mad to face that person. But I know she went in, she you know, made a time to pray and do the prayer every day, you know, to really find her own message from that comes from her divine source, divine spark, and realize that, you know, if she doesn't able to forgive this person, then she and her son will be in a constant pain and suffering. And she did so she just continued doing, may peace prevail on me, and may peace prevail on my son, and may peace prevail on earth, over and over and over and again. And I saw this process that she went through, and it was painful. I was able to pray together, but you know, the biggest thing is her own work that she had to do. Mm-hmm. And as she continuously doing this, she started to hear her own voice telling her that only way to create peace is by accepting the apology and like forgive the man. So she, you know, she called the victimizer and invited him into the house and accepted the apology and asked him to move forward, you know, to live his life. And the victimizer were like, he thought that he would, you know, he would never receive like this cheering message from the mom who, so he was like really surprised, and they both went to tears and they promised each other that they will, from now on, their life will be dedicated to forgiveness. And it's the only way to create peace is by doing that. And then she said that when she was able to forgive this person, the peace came back to her life. You know, the situation didn't come back. Situation didn't change, but just this like unexplainable peace was just there with her. And she said, "Oh, this is it." You know. And then as the peace came back into her life and her son was able to forgive too, and then this healing process healed the son's body too. And now, you know, he's able to be, it took a long time, but he practiced and practiced and practiced, and now he's able to walk by himself, and then he's able to live his own life, you know, dedicated to teach about forgiveness and prayer. And I think this story always reminds me that you need to really follow your voice. And then that voice may seem to say, you know, your head might want to go against that voice, inner voice. Mm-hmm. And then at that time, that emotion doesn't follow that inner voice. Doesn't seem like it follows the inner voice, but really trust that more, you know, trust that more, because that voice is telling the truth. And the voice of the head is more of from the common knowledge, or the, you know, it's like the taught knowledge will tell you from the head. But the heart or the inner voice is really telling you the true path. And then sometimes it may be difficult, but if you follow that, it will really guide you to that eternal peace. Whatever the environment, whatever the situation, the peace is really created by your own self. And we believe that, but, you know, people are in sometimes in a very difficult situation that we would pray instead of that person until that person can pray for themselves. And yeah. I think that's our job to do that.
One of the things I've been reflecting on as you were talking, Maki-san, is how it's a little bit of a paradox, because there's so much joy and so much healing and so much fulfillment in living a life that is guided by love and forgiveness and generosity and kindness, and yet we have these tendencies to towards these other qualities that are not as positive. And, you know, we have fear, we have anger, we have, you know, jealousies that come up and that are so constricting almost. It's like we're holding our own throats in this grip, you know, and it, even though we know logically, we've read the books, we've heard the teachers, we know this in our heads. I mean, intellectually, we know the theory of love and generosity and kindness, but that grip that we're holding ourselves in, it's not something that we can just automatically release. It takes a process. You know, it's not enough to know it in your head. You have to know it in your body. You have to know it in the cells of your being that you want, you know, that not that you want forgiveness, but almost that's your natural state. That's your natural way of being. And there's a beauty, I think, to the struggle or to that journey that we take to get from one shore to the other that you're describing. And I love that analogy of the, you know, the boiling pot, that we just have to have that strength of commitment to not give up too early, to not, you know, to not to see the journey itself as kind of part of the destination. And I was thinking about one of the stories I heard from you earlier that I think it would be lovely to share on the call, about your the experience of praying for peace in Poland and kind of the transformation. I think this was maybe 15 years ago. And it's a similar story in terms of, you know, kind of pointing to the power of transformation and how showing up, something as simple as showing up and you know, kind of vocalizing the prayers. It has a momentum of its own that takes over the heart. I'd love for you to share that.
It was a World Peace Prayer Ceremony, which I was telling you about, which we pray for the 191 different countries using the different flags. We did a World Peace Prayer Ceremony in Poland 15 or so years ago, when Poland was still under like communism state. And so the people were like very difficult to, their everyday life were very difficult, very restricted, and we went to do this ceremony because the priest in the church were so committed to create, was like wanting, really strongly dedicated for peace and wanting to do peace ceremony at his church. So we went to the church to do the ceremony. But people who came were not interested at creating peace in the world at all. Like, they were really wanting to create peace of their own. They really needed to have a peace in the family and peace in themselves. So they're really not interested. They were not interested in praying for the peace, but they came because they loved that priest. So they came, and when the peace ceremony started, no one was praying for any country at the beginning. But we said, okay, we will pray. You know, if the people that don't want to pray, we will pray. And we just did our normal peace ceremony, starting with alphabetical order, so A, B, C, D, you know, Bhutan and Cambodia and Denmark. And as the letters go, D, E, F, still no one's praying, but as it reached like Ghana, Gambia, like few of the people who were sitting in the front row started to pray because maybe they thought like, oh, poor these families, they're praying, but no one's praying. Let's pray together. And then So some people who like felt sorry for us started to pray, and as few people started to pray, this energy like started to connect with others, and as we go further down the alphabetical order, people started, more and more people started, and as we reach the P, which is colon, most of the people pray, I mean everybody prays, and from there, Poland, you know, United States, Vietnam, I mean Venezuela, and from P on, everybody joined the prayer. And when we finished with the last prayer, which is May peace be in the all of the world, everybody stood up and hugged each other and said, like, they were so happy that they were able to pray for the peace. And at the end of the ceremony, people came up to my mother and said, like, you know, we were only thinking about our everyday life, and we thought we were never able to serve for others or serve for others or to the world, because we were so needed to do for every, use our minutes and lives for our own self. But when I joined this prayer, I realized that there are ways that we can serve to create peace in the world. And she said, we will continue this prayer as long as we live, because we believe that we can do something for the world. And this is the true joy that has brought it us, and true peace that is created in our hearts. And that message was like really, really deep, and it really stayed in my heart and my parents' heart for a long, long, long time. And I think that's the power of community. You know, if you are alone, you won't be able to continue, or you will just give up really quickly. But if you have a community that can support, help each other, things that seem impossible become possible. And I always think about like the puzzle piece. You know, in a puzzle piece, there is always a piece that's bumped out, and piece where there is like indented in. Mm-hmm. And because there's bumps and holes, I don't know if you say hole, space, we can connect, right? So I really think we don't have to think about positive or negative or good or bad or dark or light. It's all like we just need to accept our peace. And then if we accept our peace, there's somebody who can fill that space that's not really, that seems like negative to you. And then the bumpy part, you can feel that using the bumpy piece to connect to the person. And then if you see as a whole, it becomes perfect. So if you just see yourself, it might not be perfect. Or if you compare with others, it might look different. And that's because you need to connect. That's because we are created to connect to each other. And I really learned that from my sisters, because we are also different. But if we connect to each other through the differences, we can become more whole, and our perspective becomes bigger. And it's about letting go of your opinion or your way of doing, but just, you know, be part of that big piece, and then offer your idea or offer your perspective. It's like that offer is going to create the... It's the offer by all these different pieces is making you see the whole vision. And so I believe that community, like service space, is really a way to make us realize that we don't need to be perfect, but we as a whole is a perfect if we just accept who we are and then appreciate who we are.
That certainly resonates with me too, Maki-san. I wanted to jump in to share my gratitude with you. I remember being in Japan a few years ago, and you have supported my journey in many beautiful ways. I remember being on a subway ride with you in Tokyo. I don't know if you recall, but it was a very powerful conversation in my life, and I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you. I remember too.
I'd love to kick it off here and ask you a question around some of the ethos of what I've been feeling on this call. You know, two of the words that came to my mind, one was authenticity and the other was feeling. And from my experience, these are approaches to living and being in relationship that are hard to do. I felt you reference the freedom with which you express your emotion, and you reference tearing up on multiple occasions. And I wanted to ask your reflections on that, that at least in my experience, for many people in the dominant culture and society, it's very hard to feel that deeply, to feel the pain of others, to feel the joy of others, to be moved emotionally through what is happening. And I'm wondering if you have any reflections on how that growth process was for you to develop that capacity, and what others can do to grow that in themselves.
I think, as I said earlier, this is one of my quality that I carry from the young time, and it's in a way it's very positive and it's really good, and it makes me really easy to connect with others. But if you see the negative side, if I say a negative side, the quality of this negative side is that I can really connect or understand that pain very easy, that it can harm myself. So when I was working as a physician in the hospital, I became sick because I would really resonate with the suffering of the family and the suffering of the patient, and it was very difficult for me to make a distance with that individual people that I was taking care of. And so, what Virgil has asked me, it's one of the qualities that seems really good, but it's a weakness. It's a strong point, is a weakness point too. And I really believe that there is no good and bad, or no positive or negative. Something that seems positive can really become negative. But if you, it's like understanding yourself, and how do I try not to, how do I cultivate so that positiveness can be more service to the world, and the negatives can be, protected by myself or other. So I don't know if you understand, but it's about that quality that you carry from your younger age. And then at the same time, also the environment can create you to not become emotional. For example, in Japan, the train is so crowded in the morning, so that if you try to be always able to feel the emotional or to be empathized, then you cannot live in crowded city like Tokyo, because then you'll be if you're really connected to how you're feeling, you're too angry all the time that you cannot live normal life. So the environment that you're in is sometimes causing you to, disconnect to that part of yourself which is trying to feel. And if you're too used to that, then you would forget to connect to that place. So I think you need to create a space for yourself to really connect to what, asking yourself, are you happy? Are you sad? Why are you sad? And those practices will make you keen to how you're feeling or how others are feeling.
Very helpful. Thank you so much. And in the spirit of moving forward, I will invite the next question.
Hi, this is Aryeh from Half Moon Bay. Maki, thank you so much. Such an inspiration to listen to you, and to you too, Pavi. My question is, I've been paying attention to the demographics of religion around the world, and so much prayer for so many of us is associated with our religious practices. And I'm seeing two kind of contradictory trends. On one hand, there are more and more people around the world who identify themselves as religious. And people who identify themselves as religious, there are more and more of them who identify themselves with the fundamentalist wings of their own religions, whether it's Jews or Muslims or Christians or whoever, or people who very much see the truth as being contained inside their own religion. And on the other hand, the contrary trend, there are more and more people who identify themselves as not being religious and not having any particular spiritual orientation or practice. Maki, you travel around the world and your family travels around the world. I'm wondering if you have any comments on what you see and how these tendencies relate to the environment for prayer when you bring the practice of prayer around the world.
Yes. I thank you for the wonderful question. I think I feel the same way as you do. Like, if you focus on the practice of the religion, there are so many differences and so many contradictories between different religions. So what we are trying to see is that, like divine spark in each one of us, we have divine spark and our expressions are different. We believe that each religion's true principle is same. And then to understand this, we do Symphony of Peace prayers in Fuji, Mount Fuji in May, which is all about understanding different religions through the peace prayers. We ask different religious leaders to do the peace prayers in that religion. For example, Muslim, Christianity, Buddhism, Hinduism. So all different religions are invited to do the peace prayers. And we as a people who come to pray will experience the different religions. And when you experience the different prayers and different methods and different religions, you would instantly understand that they resonate same energy. And the wording or the method is different, but it's something that connects to the deep, something that connects or something that energy that you feel are really similar. And then that I really think understanding religion by head is very, very difficult. But if you understand through your experience, that experience is true for you for the rest of your life. And if you understand that all the religions have the similar energy, that all the religions' peace prayers have similar energy, then you would start to know that even though you hold a religion or you don't believe in religion, there is a peace prayers, and that peace prayers have the energy to heal yourself or others. I hope that I answered your question.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Maki.
Thank you.
This is Wendy, and I'm here with Aryeh. And this phone call is just so inspiring, and thank you, Maki, for showing that that prayer can actually be a path for action, and thank you, Pabi, for the poetry of your questions and your comments. So my question is, sometimes it feels to me that the natural world can be a prayer partner, and maybe because I live in a place where there's ocean and a lot, so much beauty in the natural world near where we live. Do you ever experience that as well, that the natural world, the trees, the oceans can be partners as well with you in prayer?
Yes, thank you very much. You reminded me of a very important thing. I was only talking about humanity and the countries, but yes, the natural world is a true partner which can always send, you know, give us a deep message and realization. And when I am like deeply wounded or confused, I always go to the natural world and then just sit quietly and meditate. And that through the meditation, I learned so many true principles from the natural world. For example, I was once meditating and saw heard the bee buzzing, and I opened my eyes and realized that bees were, you know, going flower to flower. And through that process, bees work, I realized that, you know, we as a human being can live, you know, like a bee is collecting honey, but at the same time, it's helping flower to make seeds. So as I saw the bees, I realized that human beings have two roles like bees too, you know, to live for your own mission, and at the same time, that mission is really truly connected to the world mission, and that's the way we should live. And these like bees, just simple work of bees is like giving me a whole big realization of who you are, what your path should be. And so yes, the natural world is always the true teacher and guidance to our daily life.
Well, thank you so much for that. I love your comment in the beginning of prayer being a language, and what I'm hearing is that you're saying that prayer comes in many languages, even non-human language.
Thank you, yes.
Wonderful. And so I'd like to invite in, there's a couple of questions that have come in from online, so I'd like to ask on behalf of Allison. She asked, Maki-san, did you find any insight on dying and death?
Yes, when I was a pediatrician, I was working at the cancer oncology department for the children. And the children, younger children at the age of like 5, 4, they taught me a very, very strong teaching, which is like death is not something that you should be afraid of. And when I was, you know, communicating with these children, they often say like, you know, I'm not scared of dying, but I'm not going to say this to my parents because it's going to hurt them, you know. And they know this. They know, they just, like, they don't say, like, this is the big message that I'm telling you. It's just through simple conversation, they speak death and dying like this way. And that really, like, made me realize that from our true nature, the death is not supposed to be something that we're afraid of. But as we grow up, and we start to learn about death or dying, we start to think and fear that process. And if you think about cells, your body is living, but every day your cell dies through, you know, apoptosis and every day your cell is experiencing the birth. Your body is experiencing the birth of the cell and apoptosis of the cell. And that balance of birth and death is creating, making you alive. And if you think about that, your body is experiencing that every day, every day. So why do we have to be scared of the death? And so all these work that I did in the hospital made me realize that we don't have to be afraid of death, but we need to create an environment which can create us think that it's not something that we should be afraid of. And my another mission is to create some kind of people to talk about how they're feeling or what their fear about, and this place, safe place for people to express about death and dying is one way closer, one step closer to creating an environment which is not, which is a little bit peaceful and harmonious place to end your life.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for the insight, and I think it's a powerful thing personally even to hear about that question, which I'm going through with my parents right now in terms of their inquiry. And I'm going to move on to the next question.
Arigatou gozaimasu, Maki-san. This is Kozo from Cupertino, and just thank you so much for all the work you're doing. You know, I think of you as like one of the bees and just pollinating so many beautiful seeds all over the world. I wanted to ask you about, I know you were in medicine, and you know, you actually just said you were working in oncology. And what I find in Western medicine, and you know, I know Japan is a lot Western medicine, is that the power of prayer and intuition are often disregarded or almost, I could say, excluded. So I'm wondering how your journey and how your views on medicine have shifted since you became involved with the power of prayer.
Yes. It is. It is. It's unfortunate, but in a medical world, power of prayers are not, you know, people may believe, many people, even they believe in the power of prayer, they don't express that in the hospital. And as my work, when I was a physician, I knew that the power of the prayer. So I wouldn't. This is just from my experience. I work in a children's hospital. So that at night, when parents had to go to their house, that there is a crying hour from like 7 o'clock at night to 8 o'clock at night. For 1 hour, babies and young children cry because the parents have to go home. But I knew that I can connect to them, and if I go closer physically to try to hold them, they would be really afraid of me because all I do is hurt them. So I don't go close to them, but from far away places, I just really pray for the peace of their soul and peace of their existence. And then as I pray for each children that's in my room that I was in charge of, slowly by slowly they go into sleep, you know, like quietly they go into the sleep. And at first I thought, oh, because they were tired of crying, so they're sleeping. You know, I was kind of doubt. I mean, at the same time I was doubting, and then when I talked to my colleague, they would be like, yeah, that's just like coincidence. But if I continuously doing this, you know, it really shifts the energy. And it's about that life is all about, you know, the word prayer, it doesn't have to be word prayer, but life is all about really living from your inner source, the divine spark. And then it's about, it's our mission or it's our practice to know how to live from there. And the expression may be prayer, the other expression may be music, whatever it is, if we really live from that place, it always connects to the world. It always connects to the person in front of you. And then the energy will be connected and the peace will be created in the environment. Mm.
Beautiful. Thank you.
And Maki-san, would it be okay if we went a few minutes over today, just about 5 minutes, as there's one more question here in the queue?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, wonderful. So there's a question here from Susan. She asks, do you have any advice for working mothers?
Yes, I am a working mother myself. I have 3 children who are 8 years old, 6 years old, and 3 years old. And I think that children really know. I mean, we cannot lie to children. And even though I'm not home, they know that I'm not playing around or like meeting friends to enjoy. They know that I'm doing work to really work something that's very, very important. And then, you know, even they are really small, they can understand and really support me. And then sometimes I feel like, you know, I feel pain if I cannot protect them from, if I'm not there to protect them, or if I'm not there when they're sick, or if I'm not there to comfort them. But that pain, emotional pain, is coming from your emotional self, you know? So I always tell myself not to be confused with, you know, receiving message from the emotional place. So if I go deeper into my source, inner source, the message is like, believe in the child's, you know, source. Believe that child has a divine spark in themselves, each one of them. And they can really live strongly from there. And something that seems really painful is just a surface, and then really trust them that they have that. And they can live from that. And if I can go deeper and then connect it to that place, I can really trust them. And that I believe that trust is the most powerful thing to create transformation. If I can trust them deeply enough, they can trust themselves too. And that trust in their own divine spark can create a strong growth and strong power to protect their own self. So it's very, like, working mothers are so difficult, but my mother always say that they are protected by this something great, greater than ourselves. You know, they're coming from this beautiful universe. The life is coming from the beautiful universe, and it's protected by that beautiful something great power. And then I have to believe in that. And then my mother always says, that something great, the power of this universe is much, much greater than the power of mother. So sometimes it's better not to interfere. It's about, so trust that, and then just pray that the baby or the child can be strong enough to really find their own spark and live from there.
Thank you so much. I'm going to hand it over to Pavi as we head towards closing.
Thank you, Birju, and thank you so much, Maki-san. In a gentle way, you've shaken this call. You've shaken us all in a beautiful way, and with the simplicity of your words and the kind of deep wisdom of your heart. Just one more question before we close, and that is, what can we do to serve your work in the world?
My mother always says that there are so many different ways to express, and that, you know, that expression, if that expression is coming from the source or the divine spark of yourself, then it's that really service to the humanity. So I really hope that each one of us can find our own source or our own divine spark, and then really express our life from that place. Okay? And at the same time, if you have extra energy to do something, or if you're not sure of what to do, I really hope that people can really pray for the peace of the world, because the world is really needing the power of the prayer right now, and there are so many people who need this positive energy. And so if you have extra minutes, or if you have extra energy to do something, and if you're not sure of what to do, please pray for the peace of the world. And if we can pray, if we can continue our prayer until each individual can pray for themselves, then eventually this prayer will be, my mom always said that her wish is that religion would, you know, disappear, that everybody can find their own wisdom within themselves, that religion is not necessary. And then until that time comes, our work is to really do that on behalf of humanity. So I hope we can continue this prayer, and may peace prevail on earth.
Peace prevail on earth. Thank you so much, Maki-san. We've just had a realization on our end that it is 3:30 a.m. Tokyo time, which is where Maki is calling in from. As a mother of three and leader of an organization and all the other beautiful roles that she plays, it's incredible that you carved out time so generously to share from your path. And you've left us with so many nuggets that we'll carry in our pockets for many, 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 many years to come. Thank you so much for being who you are in this world.
Thank you so much, too. Because of this opportunity, I was able to look back into my life and look for the stories that really blossomed my life and understand deeper about my mission. So all these work that you're doing is really creating a difference in the world and difference in me. So really, I have so deep appreciation to Birju and Pavi and Service Space for creating this kind of opportunity for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And on the count of three, I will be taking everyone off of mute, and I invite you to say thank you, Maki-san.
One. And may peace prevail on earth.
Oh, I like it even better, both. One, two, three.
Thank you,
Maki-san.
Thank you,
Maki-san.
Peace prevail on earth.
Peace prevail on earth.